You're listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hi there. Welcome to the Dr. Nina Show here on LA Talk Radio. I am your host, Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, and I am here to help you stop counting calories, carbs, and fat grams and macros or anything and get to a healthy weight all without ever thinking about food. If you would like to call in and talk with me, the number here is 323-203-0815. I would love to hear what is on your mind, what is eating at you, because the real problem with binge eating, stress eating, any kind of emotional eating, the real problem is not food. The real problem is what's eating at you and what is weighing on you. And I want to welcome Kylene on Instagram. She's saying hi. So hi, Kylene. Welcome to Instagram folks as well. Hi, Irina. Hi, everyone. So I want to finish talking about what I started talking about last week, which was the idea of success and failure when it comes to changing your relationship with food. And one thing that is important to look at is the sense of helplessness over food that a lot of people feel. In fact, everyone who comes to me, they say they have no willpower, they have no control, they feel totally powerless, totally helpless, either all the time or at times. And if this is something that you can relate to, ask yourself this. Maybe there's something in your life where you feel helpless. Maybe there is an aspect of your life where you feel helpless. And if you weren't trying to control food, what would you try to control in your life? Helplessness is a passive state. Helplessness is the most awful feeling that we can have. And I think we all had a lot of feeling of helplessness in 2020 over this virus, right? We felt helpless. There was only so much we could do. And it's a terrible, terrible feeling. And it is a passive state. And when we feel helpless, we try to reverse it. We try to feel powerless over something else, or we displace it. So instead of feeling helpless over something in your life, a virus, a difficult boss, a relationship, some issue that's going on for you that's making you feel powerless and helpless, it becomes, oh, I'm helpless and powerless over my eating. That's the thing that I'm helpless over. So it gets transferred and displaced. Counting calories, focusing on food, weighing yourself every hour, those are active things to do. That's being active. Active feels, you know, positive. It feels good. Anger is an active feeling. So even if you are getting mad at yourself for what you are eating, you are turning passive to active, but you're taking it out on yourself. So maybe if you get mad at yourself for overeating, for whatever is going on with food, for what you weigh, take a look at what else you'd be mad about, what else you'd feel sad about, where else in your life are you struggling? Because it is very common to turn that into struggles with food. My very first group, there was a woman there who insisted that her issues with food had nothing to do with anything that was going on in her life, in her mind, in her emotions. No. She just needed to lose 20 pounds and she couldn't lose it because she had no willpower. She would repeat this every single week. And I pretty much despaired of ever getting through to her. And then on the last day of the group, the last day of the program, she said that she'd been thinking about it. And she said, you know, she thought maybe if she were not focused on losing those 20 pounds, she might want to leave her husband. Oh, so focusing on 20 pounds kept her from what was really weighing on her, which is that she was dissatisfied with her marriage and with her life. And she was afraid that if she lost weight, she felt good about how she looked, that she would then become very impulsive and lose her husband, which, by the way, is one of the ways that we sabotage ourselves. You know, one of the chapters in my book, Stop the Sabotage. One reason for sabotage, either you get to your great perfect weight, but you can't stay there, or you just get within 5 pounds and you just can't seem to make it all the way to the goal weight, and you start eating again and gain it back. One of the reasons for that is fear of impulsivity. What might you do if you lose weight, feel good about yourself, and aren't distracting yourself from life stuff with thoughts about food and your body? So last week I talked about when you feel successful. So we talked about failure. You can fail without being a failure. Don't personalize failure. We all fail on our way to success. If you fail, that doesn't make you a failure. It doesn't mean there is something wrong with you. It just means, as Thomas Edison said, he said he found 700 ways not to create electricity, found 700 ways that didn't work, but he didn't feel like a failure. It just helped him get to where he wanted to go. So, and hi, Dina from Russia. Welcome, welcome, welcome. So when you feel successful, when you feel good about yourself, you are less likely to turn to food for escape, for comfort, or for whatever reason. And so what is the definition of success? Let's just take a moment and look at that too. Success is the achievement or accomplishment of something you want. How do you measure success in your life? Is it only the number on the scale? Do you only feel successful and good about yourself if you get to a certain weight? If you are wearing skinny jeans, or you know you're wearing those size 26 jeans or whatever, different dress size, jean size, pant size, shirt size, what have you? Is that your measure of success? I want to suggest that there are other measures of success that we want to look at. What about the number of friends you have? And that doesn't mean if you don't have a lot of friends, it doesn't mean you're not successful. But some people have a lot of friends. And some people have just a few friends, and those friends are very important to them. So, you know, that's a tricky one. But, you know, measure the amount of love in your life, I guess, is what I'm saying. Measure the number of people you love, the people who love you. That is a measure of success. Or, you know what, forget numbers. Forget numbers. Let's just do away with numbers. What about how much you enjoy your life? How fulfilled you are? What about having the courage to follow your dreams? These are also ways to gauge success. I know a lot of people who look very successful on the outside. They have the mega mansion. They have the super expensive cars. They have all the stuff, all the things. But you know what? They're not happy because they don't feel good about themselves. They don't feel good in their lives. Things won't make you happy. A size won't make you happy. A bigger car won't make you happy, and a smaller jeans won't make you happy. Happiness truly is an inside job. So stop dieting and start looking at why you're turning to food, not what you are eating. New rule of success. Success is when it comes to eating issues, whether it's a full-out binge eating disorder problem or subclinical, you just have an unhealthy, unhappy relationship with food. Success is identifying why you're eating, not what you're eating. Start with that. Losing weight is not about willpower. Anyone who's been on a diet has tons of willpower. It's just not sustainable, and it's not sustainable for many, many reasons. So the first step to success in changing your relationship with food is to identify what is eating at you. Why are you eating? Not, oh, I didn't eat that. Yay me. That's not success. That's willpower. That's control. That doesn't get you anywhere. But if you realize, oh, I was lonely and this symbolically filled that emptiness inside, or I was happy and this was really the only way I can celebrate, or, you know, I was rewarding myself for whatever reason, or punishing yourself, or avoiding something painful, something upsetting. It's easier to be mad at yourself for eating XYZ than it is to be mad at someone else in your life, maybe someone that you love, or maybe you're mad at a situation you can't do anything about. So full circle back to control. You focus on not having control over aspects of eating instead of aspects of your life. So one thing that you want to keep in mind is that instead of dieting, because dieting doesn't work in the long run. In fact, dieting in the long run causes weight gain. Yes, you heard it from me. I write about some of the research in The Binge Cure. You're welcome to write to me and I'll let you know what some of this is if you don't want to read the book. But in the long run, dieting causes people to gain weight. So don't go on a diet. Instead of dieting, respond to yourself. Respond to your thoughts and your feelings in a new way. Identify what they are and then respond to yourself with words. Comfort words over comfort food. And by the way, if you were listening last week and you heard my quotes, the quotes on failure from Michael Jordan, Steve Jobs, Thomas Edison, one thing that they all had in common is that they believed in themselves even when things were not going their way. They had an unshakable belief that they could do it even when they were struggling. So believe that you can identify and work through whatever is going on in your heart and mind. And when you do that, when you identify it and then you respond, you don't need food to cope. Then food just becomes breakfast, lunch, dinner, snacks. What do I want to eat? I'm hungry. That's liberation. And that's what I want for all of you. So one thing that I find in common with a lot of people that I hear from is they are too hard on themselves. Can you relate? Are you too hard on yourself? So I was pondering this, and serendipitously, I was looking at a new edition of Psychology Today magazine, and there is an article in it called, "Are You Too Hard on Yourself?" How perfect is that? So I want to share this article with you because I think there are a lot of points in it that you can really benefit from. And again, if you would like to join me today, the number is 818-203-0815. I would love to hear from you. Or you can also, if you're on Instagram, you can just drop a comment in the comments and I will see it and respond to that. Okay, so are you too hard on yourself? Got to break out my glasses because I can no longer see. What is that about? Okay. Here are my cool glasses, and now I can see. So this is by Alice Boys, Dr. Alice Boys, and she says, "You may be more critical of yourself than you realize." We all engage in a bit of self-flagellation now and then. But some people who are frequently too hard on themselves typically see their self-criticism as justified. Perfectionists are especially vulnerable to this. Who can relate? Any perfectionists out there? Listen to this. They may not even realize they're doing it, being hard on themselves, but awareness is the first step to changing this dynamic. To give yourself a reality check, here are 7 types of negative self-judgment. Okay, number one, you beat yourself up over mistakes that have minimal consequences. When we make mistakes, for the most part, they're small ones. They have negligible consequences. For example, you're usually vigilant about checking sell-by dates, but one time you don't and you end up buying a huge tub of yogurt that's expiring the day you buy it, stuff like that. So instead of beating yourself up, oh, Carly Gash can relate. Yes. Instead of beating yourself up, cut yourself some slack. Give yourself a threshold for messing up. For example, ignore mistakes that waste under $5 or $10. Ignore those mistakes. They're not really that big in the long run. I mean, she's talking about money, but you get the idea. Mistakes that have minimal consequences that, you know, it's when other people say, what's the big deal? To you, it's a big deal, but question that. Question the idea that you have to be perfect in order to be good enough. So it's that dichotomy of I'm either perfect or I'm terrible. I either win or I lose. I'm either perfect or I suck. Really watch for those kinds of ideas. Another thing is, after correcting a mistake, you keep criticizing yourself. Who can relate to that? Show of hands on Instagram. Give me a wave. So Dr. Boies says that recently she typed the wrong name in an email. She realized her mistake a couple of minutes after she hit send. She apologized to the person straight away. Oh, Maya can relate. But then she continued to criticize herself. And she said, oh, she did the same thing to someone else a few weeks ago. So on and off all day, she was telling herself how rude and disrespectful it was to get someone's name wrong. So, you know, while this is somewhat true, she had done what she could to make the situation right. So her self-criticism should have stopped there, but it didn't. So recognize that guilt motivates us to make amends and to endeavor not to repeat mistakes. So allow yourself to feel a little guilty and then deal with it and then go on. Don't continue to write your perceived, you know, emotional crime. Allow yourself to move on once you've done your best to correct an error. Another way that people are hard on themselves is your self-care is continually bumped off your to-do list in favor of other priorities. Maybe you need a new mattress because your current one has become uncomfortable. You've been trying to find the time and energy to replace the bed for 6 months, but it keeps getting usurped by other items on your to-do list. Pay particular attention to when you continuously bump health and fitness-related self-care, since these are relatively high-stakes concerns. I hear that a lot. I hear, oh, I had to make sure the kids got breakfast, and I was so busy making them the perfect breakfast with garnishes and everything that I just didn't have time to eat, and so I got so hungry that later I ate too much. I can't even tell you how many times I've heard that. Well, guess what? If you have the time to take care of your kids and give them breakfast, you have time to take care of yourself too. You could have breakfast with your kids. What an idea. So the tip is, you might take care of yourself reasonably well in some ways, but you still have some domains of self-care that you never prioritize. Allow yourself the time, money, or mental space you need to take care of yourself. I got another hands up from Carly Gash. She can relate to this one. Third one. When someone treats you poorly, you find a way to interpret it as your fault. Oh my gosh. This is such a good one. When something goes wrong interpersonally, do you always see it as your fault? For example, if a teammate doesn't follow through, it was your fault for not reminding them. When someone wrongs you, you second guess yourself about whether you're entitled to feel angry. You tell yourself the problem must be some aspect of you. You're too fussy. You're too demanding. You expect too much. If someone doesn't communicate with you clearly, it must be because you're unapproachable. It must be because you didn't make it easy enough for them. If you find yourself wanting to speak up in situations when you feel annoyed or aggrieved, do you do it? Yeah. Yes, Janine can relate to this one. Absolutely. This is so common. Do you second guess yourself or chicken out? Do you feel responsible for the way that other people treat you? And by the way, I find this is aside from the article, I find this is really true of people who were the scapegoats in their families. People who are the scapegoats, and you know the scapegoats are the ones who are the holders of the truth that nobody wants to know. And so what happens with scapegoats is no matter what happens, it's the person is blamed. If you're the scapegoat, it's on you. I remember, you know, things would, people tell me things like there was the golden boy. There's often, if there's a scapegoat, there's often a golden child, golden boy, golden girl, and then you. And if something went well, oh, the golden child is praised. You must have done this wonderful thing. Someone cleaned out the pantry. Why? It must be the golden child. If something goes wrong, well, it must be the scapegoat. And people fall into these roles. And then even though you consciously repudiate them, you consciously say, hey, I didn't do that. This is unfair. They are picking on me. What's the deal? Consciously, you know it's not true. Consciously, you know it's not fair. Unconsciously, you pick up and internalize this sense of feeling responsible for all that goes badly. Yes, Janine is saying she literally believes that she's always responsible for how interactions with people go. And can totally relate to the scapegoating. Quick, funny story. I think it's funny. I mean, you might not think it's funny, but I think it's kind of funny. So when I first met my husband, he worked downtown. And when we were first living together, he worked downtown and he would leave like at 4:30 in the morning, and he would go to the gym before his office opened at 6 a.m. because he kept East Coast hours. And all of which is to say that we never saw each other in the morning. And then after we'd been married a long time, like, I don't know, 10 years, he changed jobs and he was around in the morning. And he would be like monosyllabic. I'd say, good morning. And he'd be like, ugh. And I thought, oh my gosh, what did I do? What did I say wrong? Is he mad at me? Absolutely did this thing. I thought, what did I do to make him so grumpy? So I said, what did I do to make you so grumpy? You're always so mad at me in the morning. And he said, what are you talking about? I'm not mad at you. He's like, I'm just not awake. So, I mean, it was kind of funny because I, like, for, I don't know, like a couple of weeks, I was just racking my brain thinking, what did I do to make my husband upset? No, he wasn't upset. He's just not a morning person. And I didn't know that because I really never saw him early in the morning. So that's an example of how we take responsibility for the way people are or the way people are towards us. And then, yes, Janine, it causes shame. We don't just feel that we did something wrong. We feel like there's something wrong with us. And therefore, it becomes unbearable. And then you can't be with yourself because you're always feeling a sense of guilt. What did I do wrong or what didn't I do? And a sense of shame. What's wrong with me? Which is an unbearable place to be. And so we often transfer that shame to our bodies. Oh, it's our weight that is the shameful thing. And if we can just lose weight, we lose the shame. Only some part of us knows when you lose weight, you only lose weight. You don't lose the shameful aspects of yourself that you find unbearable. You don't lose qualities about yourself that you don't like. And therefore, that's another reason why there's sabotage. Because what if you feel really bad about yourself and you lose and you think, oh, but if I just lose weight, I'm going to feel so good about me. And then you do lose weight and you still feel the same about yourself. That would be devastating. As long as you can have the hope of, oh, if I just lose weight, then I'm going to feel good about myself. That hope feels pretty good, and it's really hard to give up. Back to the article. So her tip is recognize the middle ground between taking too little personal responsibility and too much. If you currently take 100% of the responsibility when things go wrong, self-experiment with taking, oh, I don't know, 50% and proceed from there. In each specific situation that comes up, ask yourself, what's the most helpful level of responsibility to take? By this, she means what level of responsibility taking is likely to reduce the chance of the problem recurring. This approach is unlikely to let the other person escape any responsibility. you know, like, okay, maybe I have some part of it, but maybe you have some part of it, or maybe I have zero part of it and it's all on you, or maybe it's on me, but it's not always on you. Not always. In fact, probably not very often. Okay, the fifth tip. You always go the extra mile. You're the one who can be counted on to go the extra mile, or maybe the extra 5 miles. Going the extra mile is admirable, but constantly going to the last inch of the extra mile can be exhausting. If you deplete yourself by doing this, you may likely suffer negative consequences. Say you're so busy being perfect in a relatively unimportant area that you leave important things unattended. Or you deplete yourself because you're so busy taking care of everybody else and always going the extra mile for everything and everybody that you deplete yourself, and then you're exhausted, so you eat something to have energy, or you're depleted and you're empty, so you eat something to feel less empty. You don't feel the void. You get the idea. Depletion is never good. This pattern may stem from imposter syndrome, she says. You fear that you must be excessively conscientious, otherwise your flaws will be revealed and your life will unravel. The easiest way to break this pattern is to practice not going the extra mile in tiny ways. Rereading an email for the sixth time is probably too much. Each time you do this, or actually don't do this, each time you don't do something that you might normally have done, it will, and nothing terrible happens, it will get easier and easier to manage. Likewise, if you don't go the extra mile and something small happens as a result, you'll recognize you're able to handle it, which is a good thing. So if you always go the extra mile, she talks about it being a part of imposter syndrome. But there's also this sense that you have to earn people's love. And this is what I see a lot in patients and clients and people who reach out to me, is they have the sense that they have to earn people's love, approval, or even, you know, that people will like them by overdoing things for them, by going the extra mile, by being super helpful, by sacrificing themselves, often sacrificing themselves to take care of the other person. Who can relate to this? Show of hands on Instagram. How often do you sacrifice you to take care of other people? That it happens a lot. And then what happens is, you know, they get their needs met and you are depleted. Maya can relate. So can Carly Gash, right? There's even a term in psychoanalysis called altruistic surrender. And altruistic surrender is when it's like a defense mechanism. Carly Gash says she goes the extra mile everywhere and it is so exhausting. Yes, it is so exhausting. Altruistic surrender is when you give up you, well, I guess figuratively. Everyone uses literally, but really they use it as figuratively. And I have picked up the habit because I have a 13-year-old daughter who literally says it literally all the time. I digress. So altruistic surrender is when you sacrifice you to take care of other people. Their needs, their wants are everything. And their needs and their wants must be met. It's important to meet their needs and their wants. Their needs and wants are important. Your needs and wants are disgusting or too much, or you have to hide them. And then what happens is all the needs and wants get expressed with food. I don't want to be taken care of. I don't want any help. I don't want anything. No, I'll do that for you. But then food takes care of you. Maya is saying, I'm trying to set boundaries to limit myself from sacrificing myself, but it can be so hard. Yes. And Carly Gash says, I am not digressing. It's my mirror neurons working. Oh, so funny. So Maya, I would ask you, what is hard about what is hard about sacrificing yourself, of not sacrificing yourself. What is the fear? Often there's a fear of, ooh, I'm going to be too much. Or if I have any needs at all, I'm going to burden other people. Things like that. And it becomes just too scary to be a burden, especially if you were made to feel like a burden purposefully or not earlier in your life. So it just becomes too much and you get scared of your own needs. And so you're there for everybody else. And then food is there for you. When you allow other people to take care of you, when you allow yourself to not take such perfect care of other people, then you're not so empty. You're not so depleted. That's you taking care of yourself. And when you do that, you're less likely to use food for distraction. Maya's afraid of disappointing people. Yes. Yeah. And then if you disappoint people, are you afraid of being a disappointment? And then if you're a disappointment, are they not going to like you? Like, you could see how far you can go down that path, and better to avoid it altogether by just taking care of everybody. Sam is telling me that I have a caller on. Hello, caller.
Good morning. Yes, you do.
Hi, Carly Gash. Welcome to the show.
Good morning, Dr. Nina. So good to hear your voice, and thank you to all the participants. And I believe in you, Maya, and Janine, and just so good that you're texting in the chat. It's just so helpful and supportive. So, I wanted to talk about this going extra mile, doing way more than expected, because I've been always doing that, and I really want to drop this. That's very exhausted. Of course, I neglect myself because in my head, I'm overthinking about what's going on in others, always trying to keep the room of the emotional temperature of the room, you know, thinking on many, many levels about other people, interactions, behaving, adjusting my behavior so everyone is comfortable and like room temperature can be good. It of course goes back to my crazy family, where I understand it now that all of them were very dysregulated for whatever reasons, for their own reasons. I'm very sorry about them, you know, but being a kid and a scapegoat altogether, and the perfectionist was hard. And it's just kicking in automatically. What I decided to do is notice it and take pauses. You know, today I was I made a new friend at the gym. We both go to Zumba, and she's just such a nice woman, like girl. And we were talking, and she actually invited me to dinner today. And then I'm like, yes. And I wanted to, like, you know, immediately offer either to bring something or like arrange something. Like, I felt so guilty for being invited, as if she invited me, and I was immediately thinking, oh my God, she invited me. It's going to be so hard for her to have me over or something, you know. So I wanted to justify my presence. I never even thought that it might be a joy for her to have me, you know, my company. It's just heartbreaking, honestly.
It is heartbreaking. And Donald Winnicott, who is a psychoanalyst, who had been a pediatrician before he became a psychoanalyst, he talked about the gleam in the mother's eye, and that the baby sees the mother he was writing in the 50s and 60s and 70s, so it's always a mother, but the mother could be a father. So I'm just using mother, but a mother could be a man, a woman, whatever, a grandmother or whatever. So when the baby sees the mother looking at her, with a gleam in their eye and looking at her with just delight, the baby feels delightful. The baby feels loved, but lovable. And that is a really important distinction. And when you don't get the gleam in the mother's eyes, you don't feel that your mere presence in the world is bringing about delight and happiness and joy. And therefore, that you take that with you into your life. And it's hard for you to imagine that people are happy to see you, that you, that, and you think you've got to buy your way into a friendship.
Mm-hmm.
Let me bring something. Always. Let me do something for you. Let me, whatever, like, mm-hmm. because you alone are not enough is the message that you got, or you alone are just a burden just by being. That's another message people get, which I suspect mm-hmm. that you got. And so it's good that you're recognizing it. It's good that you're finding it heartbreaking, which it is. And the next step is to remind yourself that these are things you learned. They are not truths. They are ideas. And think about testing it out. You know, testing out.
Dr. Nina, thank you very much. I will... I definitely am casting them out as much as I can. They come back though, but you know, never the same. It's always like easier to remove them each time. So if I never saw the gleam in my mother's face, but I kind of have partially sometimes have this feeling that people like my presence because I used to see gleam in my teacher's face. You know, like outside world, not inside my family, but outside world really loved me when I was a kid because I was just nice and I loved everyone and I talk early and sang and I was so artistic and stuff. And just everyone around loved me, but not inside the family. So I have partially can like have this feeling, but partially not. I think it comes to, I feel comfortable in an environment where connections are not too close, say it's a group setting or Zumba class somewhere where people are related but not very close. But when it comes closer, when people try to approach me, you know, to become friends, or like right away I'm seeing her third time and she's already inviting me like to hang out, I start just freaking out inside. I don't notice this process is very much consciously, but inside I start shaking. I think that's why I keep everyone out. And when it comes closer, I think that's the reason. So how do I change it? Do I just acknowledge it, notice it, understand this, immediate reaction, like an unconscious reaction, and consciously tell myself that it was back then like that, right? Now it's very different dynamic, and I'm worthy of love, and I'm an interesting person, and I can have closer relationships like friendships and other, and be okay in them, right?
Yes. And something when, like, you know, I think you heard me say it as cast them out, meaning cast out the identifications with your aunts and mother and things like that. But that's not what I was saying. I was saying, test it out. So tonight when you go to dinner, test it out. So tonight when you go to dinner with this new friend, test it out. Be the observer, not the observed. Everything you just said mm-hmm. was wonderful. Don't be a mind reader. Don't think, oh, this person's thinking this of me. Stay with your own mind. What do I think about this person? What do I think about, you know, what we're talking about, or how do I feel with this person? And challenge the idea that you have to be a certain way to be, which is different from who you are, to be likable and lovable. Okay. I also want to say that you are being told, and I know you know who this is, on Instagram, there's a message. You are a lovely person in person. People want to be around you because of who you are. Take that in. And I think you know which motorcycle riding person just wrote that.
Of course. I love you again.
So look, draw upon that experience. You also recently just met with someone in person And even though afterwards you said, oh, I said too much, I was this, I only talked about me, that person didn't feel that way. So remember that. Remember that. What is, not what if. And that this idea that you have to be more of anything or less of anything else is simply an idea from the past. That's why I want you just test it out. Show up. See what it's
like. Thank you so much. Test it out. I like this. I like this, test it out. Because when I was a kid, I used to like test things out. This is how you know. Trying life instead of like using the same patterns, which are just one in a billion pattern, which can be and not always effective. It was effective back then, but like now everything changed. So I also wanted to share with listeners that recently I've been thinking about that you talked in previous programs about how I developed this persona in many people. And then this persona gets love of people, but not the real me. And when real me is not being recognized or met or dealt with, you know, then I feel sad and like my needs are not met. My needs for connection, for love, for human warm interaction are not met, and then I go and binge because the basic needs for connection, love, are not met. So I've been thinking about it a lot, and I really am making efforts for being myself. You know, it's been a long time. I'm going out without makeup and with acne. You know, because it's just hard to put on tons of makeup, and I can do it very well. I can put on professional makeup and look like a red carpet celebrity easy, and I've been doing it for so many years before in Kazakhstan and sometime here, but then like it's just very exhausting. So what I'm testing out, being myself and like you know, trying to say what I feel or what I like or what I don't like. I'm testing it. It's a little scary because inside I have this, you know, past experiences. But I just, even when I'm scared, I just am telling myself, I'm going to do it anyways. The fear is there. It's a feeling. And I'm going to do like an effective thing. Sometimes it works. Sometimes it doesn't. But I'm really trying it, doing it as much as I can. And I wanted to tell to all the listeners that it's not as bad as we think, and it's not as scary. And it feels in the very beginning that the world will stop, that I will die, you know, or like something horrible will happen. No, what's going to happen is just we're going to change it slowly. The sky will not fall, I guarantee.
So, Carly Gash, I want you to take that reassuring, positive attitude that you just shared for the listeners, and apply it to yourself. Apply it to yourself. And yes, you are so encouraging, and so helpful, and so kind and thoughtful when it comes to other people. How about use that for yourself as well?
Yeah, I need to work on this one for sure.
Well, will you give us a call back next week and let us know how your night with your new friend went as an observer and an enjoyer of the evening? And what do you think? No mind reading and just what do you think of the experience? Not what is she thinking? Oh, did I say too much? Oh my gosh, I said too much. That's like, oh, that person thinks I said too much. You're not too much. You have a right to show up and speak and share.
Okay. I like it.
I like that you like it. I look forward to hearing all about it.
Thank you very much, Dr. Nina. I'm sending you a warm hug. And have a beautiful day.
You too, Carly Gash. Right back at you with the hug. I really miss, I miss hugging people. That was the thing that was the hardest for me for, well, aside from, you know, other things in the, that happened in 2020, like losing somebody and all of that. But my daughter once said, no offense, but I just really wish I could hug someone other than you two. And I know what she felt. I know what she meant. I think I never realized how important hugs were until you couldn't hug people. Okay, last couple of points on this article on Are You Too Hard on Yourself? Number six, you feel like a failure even though you mostly have your life together. People who are self-critical look at their lives and see all the areas in which they're not perfect. They overlook all the things they do right. I was just talking to someone earlier, and I said to him, you know what? It's like you have a field of roses in front of you, but you are looking for the couple of weeds among the roses and focusing on that. I'm not saying ignore the weeds, but I am saying put it in perspective, right? There's a field of roses with a couple of weeds. So she is saying a similar thing. What, look at the totality of your life and don't highlight and focus on and magnify the things that aren't working. She says, ask yourself what your life looks like to other people. If other people would view you as having your life together, consider whether there is at least a little grain of truth to that. Is the reality of your life and decision-making less rosy than other people might perceive, but considerably better than you give yourself credit for? What do you do right that you take for granted? For example, you pay your bills on time. A lot of people don't. Oh, Carly Gash is saying, I remember my daughter said she wanted to realize I deprived myself from warm human interaction. And so I didn't miss hugging. Yes, you deprive yourself from warm human interaction. But I'll tell you what I just thought of. And I write about this in my Food for Thought book. The woman who ate so much, she would always be in pain. But she said she felt as if her body was giving her a hug when she could feel food press out. My mind just went there. So you know, food represents people. Food represents connection, love, a bond. I'm really glad, Carly Gash, that my daughter's plaintive regret was, or an end wish was helpful to you. Yeah. Last one, really fast. You see the quote unquote dumb mistakes of others as understandable, but not your own. We all do stupid things. Maybe you turn on your blender without the lid secured properly and get smoothie juice all over the wall. When other people do things like this, do you see their lapse as understandable? After all, it's easy to get distracted. It's easy to make these kinds of mindless errors. But conversely, when you make this kind of mistake, you cut yourself no slack whatsoever and launch into self-criticism. Oh my God, how could I have not done that? That's so dumb. How could I have not remembered it? What's wrong with me? Et cetera, et cetera. So when things like this happen, ask yourself what you'd say to someone you like and respect who is in a similar situation. Try saying this to yourself. I tell people this all the time. They self-recriminate for, I ate the whole pizza. I can't believe it. I ate the whole pizza. What's wrong with me? I just lost control. I'm never going to feel better. I suck. I have no willpower. I'm disgusting. No one's ever going to love me. And it goes on and on and on, just onto just the most horrible self-criticism and self-castigation. But if you put that person in front of someone else who said that they ate a whole pizza, they'd be like, oh, maybe there was a reason. And it's, don't beat yourself up. It's like something was eating at you. What's going on, right? Treat yourself as you would treat anybody you like or care about. Treat yourself as if you were a friend. And oh my goodness, everything changes with food, because if you feel bad and you're a friend to yourself, boom, you feel better, done. But if you feel bad and you have no patience for that sad, depressed, angry, anxious, guilty, whatever bad feeling it is that you're feeling, and you're mean to yourself, you're going to go eat for comfort, eat to avoid your own mean voice, and so forth. So that's why being a friend to yourself is so important. And she says, to motivate yourself to use these strategies, you need to understand why ditching harsh self-criticism will benefit you. It's not just about feeling better. Being less self-critical can also help you make better decisions, waste less time and emotional energy, which will in turn make you more productive, she says. Well, and you know, in addition to being more productive, it'll just make you happier. It'll help you live in this world instead of existing in this world. If you're constantly battering yourself with words, it's a horrible way to be. And it affects your entire experience of life. When you're kind and loving to yourself, everything changes, including your relationship with food. So that does it for today. Thank you so much for joining me here on the Dr. Nina Show on LA Talk Radio. I am live every Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific on LA Talk Radio and Instagram on dr.nina.psychoanalyst. Let me remember my very own Instagram handle. If you like some of the principles that I am talking about, head on over to Amazon and get your copy of my book, The Binge Cure, 7 Steps to Outsmart Emotional Eating. I have so many beautiful comments there from people who said it has changed their life, and I hope that it will change yours as well. Have a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful week. Be kind to yourself. Be loving. Kylene, it is nice to see you, or at least read you. And I will see you all next week when I will have a very special guest. All right. Bye for now, everyone.
You're listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle-Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.